But even if that problem was solved tomorrow and costs immediately came down in 24 hours, there are still other problems of competition that do need to be addressed. And our concern is that we wouldn't want too much focus on one process to obfuscate the concerns around other processes as well that need to be brought to a rapid conclusion. In that regard, we just raised as an example issues around standardizing the access regime, interconnection facilities, leasing, essential facilities, the ongoing debate around finalizing the competition framework in Chapter 10 and the Section 67(4) regs, as well as the introduction of competition-enhancing mechanisms that were brought into the ECA precisely to facilitate competition in the market, such as carrier preselection, local loop unbundling. So we suggest that the current focus should carry the impetus and also be part of a broader strategy of ensuring that Chapter 10 of the ECA is implemented. We have a point in our conclusion in two or three slides where we say, if it needs amendment, amend it, but get it implemented. Because that is the chapter that contains the pro-competitive measures that are going to bring a much more level playing field and a competition-friendly environment into play. And it is that full competition, as envisaged by the ECA, an act that was passed by this committee, which will ultimately result in lower prices, more diverse service offerings, as well as a more improved consumer focus, which we imagine is the ultimate goal. So we're going to just make the point again about the importance of process, Chair. And the optimal outcome of process, I think we're all aware, and you made these points in your opening statement this morning, around the roles and responsibilities of the committee and of other players in the sector. We think that the multiple processes that are underway at the moment are very good because they lead to increased awareness of the problem, as well as the speedy introduction of interim measures. Just before sitting down here to talk to you, we saw a policy direction circulating, which we haven't had time to look at, but that's another one of these measures that we're alluding to. But we do believe that the long-term sustainable measures that are required to ensure that interim procedures are carried through to conclusion and do not inadvertently result in unanticipated outcomes. And what do we mean by that? Well, there are multiple processes underway. We're hearing words like negotiated outcome. We're part of that forum that's at ICASA discussing an industry-led initiative on the reduction of termination rates. We've seen a policy direction that's been circulated just before lunch. We want to make sure that whatever the eventual end game is, that it's the optimal price cut or the optimal introduction of a pro-competitive measure. So we just add that in as a caution. In that regard, we still think that price reduction, or in fact the introduction of any of the pro-competitive measures contained in as remedies in Chapter 10, must be done pursuant to a legislative or regulatory process by the institution tasked with this role. Parliament has made the committee made the point this morning, which I think was a useful one to restate by Honourable Member De Lange about the oversight function that Parliament plays. But we are concerned about the role that ICASA is supposed to play in the implementation of the Act and as a sector-specific regulator. Obviously, there we're stressing the importance of the speedy and effective implementation by the authority of the Section 67 framework. We think this will give regulatory coherence to the sector, will introduce and ensure procedural fairness in any of the initiatives undertaken under Chapter 10 or in terms of the Act, and will also allow for the comprehensiveness that we've been worried about, i.e. addressing the other processes around competition that aren't being finalised. And Chair, you know, if you look at, I didn't put this slide in, but we've actually mapped a chronology of initiatives that ICASA have taken over the years on pricing. And it's quite a dense slide when you look at it, and I'm happy to make it available to the committee. A lot of work has been done, and I think that if ICASA can be given the support to implement, just take that final step to implementing the Chapter 10 framework, I don't think that you're looking at very extended implementation deadlines and processes ahead. This could be done in a matter of months, subject to the time constraints in terms of regulation making in the Act. Again, I don't think we need to go into the detail of Chapter 10. It is complex, but it's not impossible to implement. And I think that the key issue there has been the output of some of the discussion we've seen today around information. The information that you need to regulate the sector properly comes out of exactly these kind of inquiries. And when done properly, we'll make sure that any pro-competitive measure that is imposed, or any of the remedies in terms of the Act that are imposed, ensure that only the areas of competitive failure are addressed, so that you're not trying to soft a fly with a cannonball, I think is the old saying. It's a very precise intervention in a market that is becoming somewhat competitive in different areas. This is really just our pre-concluding slide. You know, this summarizes what's going on at the moment. We're very appreciative of all the initiatives that are underway. They're long overdue, and we support all of them. This is part of the process of the public hearings that the committee has underway. Obviously, it's up to the committee to decide at a later stage if the ECA needs amendments to speed up its implementation or to make it more effective. The DLC, up until the policy directive was issued, we understood was involved in certainly getting a grip on what was going on, collecting research and data, pricing information, gathering all that they needed to decide on their next approach. And ICASA has two processes underway. They have the Chapter 10 process, which is simmering in the background. We're not entirely sure where it is in implementation. And this other industry-led initiative, or the moral suasion approach process, which has its own timelines and its own commitments by the operators. Perfect or imperfect, we can debate, but these are the four processes that are taking place at the moment. And in that regard, I think my bullet point is three, is really the important one. I think the industry needs some clarity as to the effect of multiple processes. It feels like one's in a foot race at the moment, and it's sort of nose for nose. It's unclear which process is going to finish first. And I suppose you could toss that back to the operators and say, wrap it up, guys, make the process get implemented, and I would pass that to those who are responsible for that decision. But we really do need some certainty on which process is going ahead, and I think that the finalization of this process, these multiple processes, will also contribute to the three C's that Dr. Barnes spoke to earlier this morning. So in summary, NATO's very supportive of an immediate cut in mobile termination rates, subject to clear process, whichever one it is. This is very good for consumers, very good for competition, for new entrants, for promoting new entrants, and making new entrants sustainable. And the multiple processes need not preclude a voluntary process, or the nudge process, as it was referred to originally by ICASA, to lower rates, but clear time frames are absolutely essential. The process cannot be left to drag on. There are financial tools available, whichever process does result in the final market intervention, to assist and inform costs and oblige parts, if that's found to be necessary. I think if you put five economists in a room, there will be five different opinions on the role of COACAM, there will be different opinions on benchmarking, there will be different opinions on the extent of the methodologies used in evaluating market competitiveness. They're all useful, they all have their pros and cons, and people far more experienced than I can lead you through the details. But they are available to help set those prices more accurately. We also reiterate our point about termination rates to be seen in the context of other problems of competition and the role of Chapter 10 in that regard. We also urge this committee to ensure that ICASA is given the support and resources to finalise a process that this committee saw fit to include in the ECA, and we make ourselves available to continue supporting that work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Susie.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to suggest two issues. The committee has made these proposals, and I think you are aware of those proposals. What do you think about those proposals from the committee? Is it too high, too low, or just moderate? What do you think? What is best for the country, for the consumers, to your own understanding? And the other thing you were saying, the ICASA must be given more time to deal with this issue. Don't you think from 2007 to 2009 is more than enough? That the consumers have waited for too long for this to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. As somebody who recently received a mobile phone bill this week and went through it in detail, I too am frustrated, and I would love to see cuts that are needed. And I do think consumers in a range of areas need relief, and I do think that things are overdue. And I think we've had this discussion before where we've spoken about whether one's swimming across the pond and it's easier to turn back or to just finish the swim to get to your goal. You have a process at ICASA that could effectively be implemented. The Chapter 10 process could be implemented quickly. It might not be able to be implemented as quickly as saying there will be a rate cut tomorrow, and if everybody agreed, that would be that, and then we'd worry about pass-through to consumers. It's not a lifelong implementation process, Honourable Member, and I think that, you know, we all know that legislative processes take time. What we're appealing for here is setting up a framework not just about termination rates, but that once that framework's in place, so that the issues that affect consumers don't have to come back to Parliament every 6 months or 8 months, or, you know, and then Parliament effectively will become a regulator. I don't think that's either desirable or what Parliament would want. I'm asking for the support to have that process implemented because there are other problems as well that will need to be addressed down the line. But I can't disagree with your point about consumer relief. And I think that we're looking at a market now where there is certainly more diversity, more price diversity, service differentiation than we've ever seen before. And some consumers are already taking advantage of that. I don't want to sit here as a marketing person, but I mean, I think these data cards are one area where we're seeing the effects of extreme competition and how good it can get for consumers. I definitely take your point, and I certainly won't counter the need for more urgent relief. Do you want to handle the first question?
Honourable Member, we've specifically steered clear of giving a specific answer with regard to numbers. And I think we've made it clear from our submission that the reason we're not presenting a number is simply because we believe that the process should create that number. So I think in principle we support the measures that have been proposed by the committee as a principle, but with the caveat that we would like what actually comes out of that process, what actually comes out to have followed a process which is sufficiently in line with the broader Chapter 10 process. With regard to actual numbers, I'm sure we are going to be challenged as to what we believe that the actual numbers should be. Let me just put a caveat to what I'm going to say. As a challenger in the market, and when I talk about the market, I'm talking about the telecommunications market in a global sense. We have a shareholder who is a global player in the telecommunications market. As a challenger in a market, the telecommunications market has over many years had a declining price model, a model globally where the price per unit of services has declined over time. Therefore, our business plan as Neotel and the direction that we have in the way that we've approached the market has been in the expectation of declining prices per unit. That doesn't mean you get smaller markets. Obviously, markets grow as more people and more companies, etc., get access to services. But it doesn't mean that the price per unit goes down. So therefore, we have an expectation of a reducing price market. And as such, we set our own termination rates on that basis, our own interconnection rates. I'll just say to you what we currently charge on termination of calls onto the Neotel network. We currently charge 29 cents for a national call. That's a call that is terminated into our network, which we carry to some point somewhere else in the country. In other words, along the same model as the current mobile termination rates. It can enter our network at any point and exit our network somewhere, or exit into a consumer on our network at any point in the country. That we charge 29 cents. If you like, that's in comparison to the 1.25 or 77 cents figure. We do not charge a peak or off-peak model. We've blended it. So we charge the same day or night. And that's in line with some jurisdictions globally. We do also have what we call a regional termination rate, which is if an operator carries the call themselves to, say, for example, from Johannesburg to Cape Town, and our consumer is in Cape Town, and they hand over the call regionally, we then charge 20 cents per minute. And that's excluding any carriage of the call across our network. So that's what we call pure termination. The model is slightly different to mobile because it's a fixed model. It's a tiered fixed model, but those are the prices we charge. As a result, we would gladly support a model that has a glide path down to 30 cents. We obviously don't have expectation that that should be sudden. I think it's very disruptive of anyone's business model to have sudden steps, but we would certainly support a glide path down to that figure.
No, sir, I'm sure the last statement that tries to cover part of my question is you say you can support anything with gold down and 30 cents and so on. But my question was going to be the reasonableness. But I saw the prices there where you were talking about the mobile. That is 176 there. So for what does it mean? It means it will be the 176 minus 125. Is 125 included just in 176?
Yes, honourable member, just to clarify, it's 176 minus 14% VAT, then minus 125, and then you get the margin. Correct.
Then the tax which will drop is what you...
That's our commercial, our profit margin is. Obviously included in that margin is some of our own cost, our own network cost. It's not pure margin, there's our own underlying cost of our own network plus the cost of the termination.
So, you know, the point I'm trying to check is that if that is the case, it means it's a very minimum cost to do it, because it was not the 125 each.
Correct. In other words, the most of what you're looking at in our pricing for mobile calls is what we pay to the mobile operators. Correct. The majority of what we get, we pay out. Correct.
No. That's what I was not understanding, because really present another piece and extract that is the cost base of the service other than taking the 125 and the rest and so on.
Thank you. I would like to hear, what are you seeking clarity on about the effect of the multiple processes? What is your concern, as you're saying there? Because I think one of the reasons why we've got multiple processes now is because in the past nothing has happened. And I think that the one process actually complements the other. And there is not a third battle for space here. ICASA must still do its job, and Parliament must do its job, the DOC. So what are your concerns?
Thanks, Honourable Member. We absolutely support all the processes. We're just unclear as the market chair. What happens if one concludes first? Are the others abandoned? Are they all going to come to finalization together? There's not, I mean, as Honourable Chair said this morning, after 2 days you'll sit and decide what next from Parliament. Will there be a resolution? Will there be, are we likely to see an amendment? It's just, we need some kind of clarity going forward. It doesn't have to be today. The policy direction, as I said, we need to study. We can't comment on that right now. We haven't even seen the time frames in it. The ICASA Chapter 10 process we know will take a while. But if the industry process to result in a cut results in a favourable cut, does that mean the end of the implementation of the Chapter 10 process? It's more process questions rather than the substance or the mandate of each organisation or portfolio to effect it.
Chairperson, I'm actually partially covered. And also after Honourable Kulwani's question, to try and just understand that perfectly well, I sense a little bit of a reluctance, and I mean, I can understand the because you're saying that there are different institutions or bodies looking at this issue. My concern is just that it almost seems as though it is indicative of how terribly rigid this market has become. That for newcomers such as Newtel, who had a battle to just for turf, basically, initially, to just establish yourselves, it is as though the big market, the big brothers, you know, Vodacom and MTN, and the discussions between the bodies and the bilaterals, as ICASA calls them, or the moral suasion process, which some of us almost regard as collusion, because those, the industry is meeting to decide how much can we lower, etc. It's actually just playing in the hands of further rigidity in the market, as we see it. My concern is, do we read and understand you correctly that you would rather not debate on what is an effective operator? You know, because essentially that is what we want to go back to. And if we look at Chapter 10 processes, our understanding is from what we had from ICASA and some of the other bodies that we interacted with, that it was a very cumbersome process, but it's also specific clauses that would need revision. Now, our concern is that if it is taking so long, then clearly something must be wrong in these processes. Because as indicated before, we started, ICASA started in May 27 with a process. So can you please just indicate to us, what in Chapter 10 would you regard as prohibitive for ICASA to really fulfill its regulatory role, you know, adequately? And secondly, do you agree that as an oversight committee, we have to identify such weaknesses that actually seems to be playing against the pro-competitive measures that ICASA needs to take? You know, Commission, Competition Commission is looking anti-competition at the end of the processes. ICASA must look at pro, sort of preventative measures. But at this stage, it seems that it's not happening. So what do you suggest should happen if we take, for instance, a resolution as a committee? Should we rather refrain from sort of looking at a specific price and rather say this and that should be changed so that ICASA could fulfill the regulatory role adequately?
Again, we support Parliament's oversight role. I mean, I think you know, a good example of correcting, not all legislation is drafted perfectly, which is that we make mistakes sometimes, but the concurrency issue, say, between the Competition Commission and what was in the Competition Act and ICASA's Chapter 10, the Subject 2 clause, has now been largely corrected through an amendment to the Competition Amendment Act. So, I think that's the point of review. No sort of member position formally on the Chapter 10 amendment, and obviously we'd be delighted to think about it and make detailed submissions. I think one obvious area which can be corrected quite quickly and easily would be the removal of Section 67, Sub 1, on the requirement to, on an ex ante basis, prescribe a list of behaviours that would amount to undue preference or anti-competitive conduct. That was tried at ICASA with the Commission, and it was found to be impossible to do, to prescribe a closed list of these things. And I don't think, I'd have to consider it a little bit more, but I don't think that if you excise that provision immediately that it would have any major impact on the rest of the chapter. On the actual implementation of the rest of Chapter 10, you're basically describing what the Competition Commission largely does, and there are people here from that body who can comment. So the same processes, one's run before the conduct and one's run after. And it's not impossible for the Competition Commission to do their job. And I think that it's getting done on an ex ante basis does present some challenges. But as I say, I think that ICASA is more than halfway across the pond. And one of the objectives that I think should be considered by this committee, if I may venture, is to say that I think the support should be given to ICASA to finalize that process, whether that's in the form of consultants or some specialists coming in that kind of system, whether it's an industry-wide grouping or purely outsourced externally. They're almost there, and it can be implemented. So I wouldn't recommend at this stage that people start looking at removing Chapter 10 or amending it in its entirety, Chair, but that's really an off-the-cuff view and not a formal NEOTEL position on the matter at this stage.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Cohen, you spoke of, you mentioned time frames. From your point of view, can you sort of give us an indication how NEOTEL thinking about this whole issue? Because we mentioned in the portfolio committee statement, I think before Christmas, lowering, and how do you see? And then another question. It seems like cat and mouse sort of thing going on there, because all the parties are not sort of willing to put the cards on the table. So this is like ducking and diving. I'm not accusing you of anything, but you know, how do you feel the willingness of all the different parties actually to come to the party and in the interest of the consumer do something?
Sure, I'll let Angus answer the first question. I'll just start with the second one. Honourable Member, I mean, that's somewhat of a subjective assessment. I attended a meeting yesterday where there were different views as to whether or not there's progress or not on the willingness to make a cut. I think that the operators who need to renegotiate the interconnection rates on a bilateral basis amongst themselves are getting on with getting the work done, and I don't think that anyone can say they're not engaging in that. Our concern is with the final implementation by your December deadline. But I think Dr. Hayes made some points about the fact that no operator can have immediate overnight cuts by 50% without some effects, and that you do have to consider things like glide paths and more accommodating measures as well, with not giving up on the important consumer, immediate consumer gain. But I can't really answer a question on willingness. There is so much activity over the last 6 weeks, probably more than there's been over the last 6 years in the sector around this issue, that I think it's very hard to deny that there is some progress going forward, quite significant.
Honourable Member, I think just I'm going to speak commercially as NEOTEL rather than to talk from a process and regulatory perspective. I think in terms of timing, we would certainly support fastening seatbelts and starting on the glide path immediately. We would be happy to see a glide path that is reasonably rapid. I think as we've indicated, we don't believe that it would be fair generally to have instantaneous changes in pricing, because there is a mechanism for determining pricing in markets, etc. But we would certainly support the start of that glide slope in the time frames that have been proposed by the committee. And I think there's been speak even of November. We would be quite happy, simply because if you look at the effect from our perspective, clearly we have a cost base which consists of termination of mobile calls, which would be felt immediately, and which we could then translate immediately into consumer benefit. So the sooner it starts, the better for us from a commercial perspective, obviously subject to process.
Okay, thanks very much. I don't see any hands. I just followed to that man who's coming in just now. No, thanks very much, NEOTEL, for your presentation. We'll call upon IFA.
Chair, sorry. Can I ask NEOTEL for their PowerPoint presentation, please, to be handed to members, please? Especially the pricing is not included in this, in the copy that we got. So if you can give us that copy, please.
I thought we just copied the presentation to Nolisandro now.
Now someone must be
frightened. Ispa? Welcome to you. Welcome to you. May I just introduce yourself? Then you know the procedure.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, Internet Service Provider Association, thank you for the opportunity to today. My name is Greg Messel, I'm Joint Chair of ISPA, and my colleague Dominic Cole is ISPA's Regulatory Advisor. I'm going to hand over to him.
Members of the Portfolio Committee, sorted dignitaries, members of the public, journalists and operators. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present today. Thank you for your interest and your oversight and your intervention in this matter, which is of critical interest to ISPA's members. We are not intending to cover, as Myrtle stated, to cover many of the facts which have already been very well ventilated in this matter. The committee seems to be very well informed about this matter. Neither do we seek to offer any further legal opinions supplementary to those which have already been offered to the committee. We are aware that the committee were recently certified as electronic communications regulation experts. We are happy with your superior knowledge in that regard. The Internet Service Providers Association,
I put them through a test, they all failed.
ISPA is an industry representative body recognized by the Department of Communications under Chapter 13 of the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act as such. We represent approximately 150 new entrants, all of whom have appropriate licensing rights, so they are active in the market in a capacity at the moment, but they have appropriate licensing rights to be far more active in the market. And by appropriate licensing rights, just to be clear, those are the same, broadly speaking, the same rights as are held by Telkom, Neotel, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C. On the others, we found are largely prevented from competing with the incumbent operators through a range of anti-competitive conduct, some of which has already been spoken about today. Certainly, the focus of this initiative, the high mobile termination rates, is a significant contributor to preventing competition and acting as a barrier to competitive entry. But it is by no means the only manner in which incumbent operators seek to prevent competition, and we will touch on that a little bit later. As has also been widely canvassed both at this hearing and at the previous hearing of this forum on this matter, the regulator has unfortunately proved ineffective at addressing either the high MTR or many of the other issues.
And we would, we'll stress this throughout the presentation, but we would really urge that the current focus on mobile termination rates should not disguise the other issues which also require urgent attention, is the portfolio committee's intention of facilitating the introduction of competition is to bear fruit. Just by a brief note there at the bottom, certain of ESPA's members have vested interests or interests in the least cost routing industry. They have a different position from that which ESPA is going to take in this position. In this presentation, they will be representing their own interests over the course of these hearings. Honourable Chair, just three general comments before moving on to some specifics. ESPA is very happy with this process, with any of the other processes for that matter. We support any constructive process designed to address anti-competitive conduct and thereby facilitate competition. This committee, as it would have heard over the course of its three-day certificate course, and has been noted in previous minutes, is well aware of the connection between introducing competition and reducing the high cost of communication to South African consumers. And then just to make the point up front that from ESPA's perspective, we have no specific knowledge of the cost of mobile termination. But looking at it historically, we regard it as being abundantly self-evident that the current rates are designed primarily as a barrier to entry and they're not related to the cost of providing that service. To an issue which has also been raised in your presentation and questioned by an honourable member regarding the competing processes, and we just thought to summarise them briefly. From this portfolio committee, we have the resolution which is the focus of this hearings. We have a potential ECA amendment or other measures which may flow from these hearings. From the Department of Communications, we have had what appears to be a failed set of negotiations with the operators, trying to negotiate a lower NTR and a glide path. We have very recently adopted the press of policy direction, which requires further scrutiny, and the department has also indicated that it is working day and night to effect a suitable amendment to the Electronic Communications Act, and we assume chapter 10 thereof. And now from the side of the culture, we have the somewhat maligned moral suasion approach. And it's not an easy phrase to say when the mouth is dry. We have the policy direction and the benchmarking exercise, which will flow from the DOC's policy direction. And we have the existing Chapter 10 process. We are not particularly sure where that sits at the moment, but we note that ICASA has recently issued out a questionnaire on peer termination, which is we regard as being a very positive step in the right direction. We are happy to support all constructive efforts to bring down the mobile termination rates, and we are happy for these to happen in parallel. But as has been raised by other speakers, we would urge all parties involved to align their efforts and to communicate effectively in terms of trying to reach what is a shared end through different means. Confusion is definitely there on the part of operators. It's been present in some of the presentations this morning, where you would have noted that there was reference to ICASA publishing a figure of 95 cents, which was not ICASA, it was the DOC. So there's some difficulty with these processes. Driving to Parliament this morning on the radio, I heard that the DOC had issued a policy direction and the council would be holding a meeting on the 23rd of October to consider that. Again, it's a conclusion of the processes and we need to be very careful and clear on what we're doing. Then, if there regards NTR as being a reasonably simple intervention, we are talking about a single rate. And we are concerned about other interventions which are coming further down the line and which are also critical. Honourable Member Kulwani in the previous hearings mentioned local loop unbundling, and that is certainly something we would want the committee to keep an eye on through this process so that we are not prejudicing vital interventions further down the line. What is ESPA's position in all of this? To address some of those processes, certainly ESPA has participated in ICASA's, moral suasion initiative. We have accepted what we regard essentially as being a watching brief. ESPA is
is not party to any of the bilateral negotiations which are taking place. We had a meeting yesterday where we were not party to any detail or tangible evidence as to the depth of the cuts and the rates at which they will be affected. It follows, therefore, that at this stage we are not particularly optimistic about the outcomes of that process. And to be clear, that's not necessarily a criticism of the regulator, but we don't believe that the proposals which will come from the operators through that process will be sufficient to be acceptable to our membership. We just note there that given that the DSC is proposing an initial cut to 95 cents per minute, and given that the negotiations between the DOC and the operators appear to have failed, it would seem to follow that the operators were not prepared to accept the figure of 95 cents, otherwise there would be no need to issue a policy direction to force them to accept that. Given that we're playing with those kind of figures, we find it highly unlikely that any proposal coming from the ICASA process will be acceptable. We also support this resolution that these hearings are based on. We support that there should be a sharp initial decrease as soon as possible to remedy the imbalance which was initially created between 1999 and 2001 in terms of the interconnection agreements and variations thereof entered into between Vodacom and MTN. We are happy to support a glide path to be initiated down to a cost-based level. Markup to the cost-based level should probably be regarded as a retail level. We note from various engagements that there is a danger in any negotiated or extra legal process that the operators will seek to attach conditions to that, and we would urge the portfolio committee and any other entity involved in such negotiations to be extremely wary of such conditions. We don't, as it's believed, that the operators are in a position to request that these conditions be imposed, and as it's so, we certainly will oppose them and reject them should they be put out there. Turning to the DOC's intervention, which as I mentioned is hot off the press, we haven't had a chance to study the policy direction yet, and as at the time this site was created, the policy direction was probably in the process of being signed, so we have not had sight of it. But certainly, as has also been expressed by honourable members of the committee, we're concerned about the quoted figure of 95 cents. We don't believe that that is a deep enough initial cut. We don't believe that it will have any significant impact on the introduction of competition. We don't believe that it will have any significant impact on retail prices. And we would certainly be more inclined towards the portfolio committee's suggestion of 60 cents than we would to a figure of 95 cents as an initial cut. We are at this point clear about the policy direction and the intended time period leading to the end of November will actually work, but I think it is probably prudent to reserve comments in that regard until we've had a chance to study the document further. And then, just to offer again what Marshall stated, if it is found to be necessary to amend the UCA, which clearly the department feels that it is, then we will support that, but we'd ask that any process currently underway not be stymied through that form of activity, that it be allowed to carry on in parallel. Many of them, in any way, at any rate, do stand ready to introduce competition, with some indicating that they will zero rate termination rates on a reciprocal basis, what is referred to as net payment zero. But the problems can happen. We also move a little further than just mobile termination rates and look at some of the other anti-competitive conduct which ISPA's members identified happens, particularly with regard to interconnection and mobile networks. A great deal of detail on this in the written submission, and we will happily provide more, including concrete examples. But if you don't have to have a lower mobile termination rate for the purposes of introducing competition, if you are still made by a refusal to deal, if you are still trying to get into the door because the operator will not talk to you after 6 months or 18 months, it is But one of the benefits that has now reduced the NTR in the context of introducing competition, when we also start a request for a 1 million rand security deposit as a standard requirement, irrespective of your particular credit history and credit record. That means it is a benefit value to lower NTR for the purposes of fostering competition, where you, as an asset seeker looking to interconnect, are required to guarantee full volumes. So, for example, if you are required to guarantee pricing over 100,000 rands worth of notes over a potential interconnect point, then irrespective of whether you do in fact price that figure over, you have to pay that money. We regard these as being discriminatory and deeply anti-competitive. And that's of course the role of the CASA in implementing and enforcing a robust access framework, which is fundamental to the success of any initiative aimed at fostering competition, which I will use to lead into some concluding slides which relate to the regulator. It's abundantly evident that this committee and the DOC would not be taking the action that they are taking if things were all well at the regulator. Clearly this committee has lost patience and this is their frustration. To expand on that point a little bit, it is our understanding that this committee played a somewhat pivotal role in the drafting of the Electronic Communications Act, that it was designed and perceived to be a watershed, a move away from the Telecommunications Act and what it represented, to a pro-competitive environment which would see competition being introduced and which would see costs being lowered. And it is also frustrating to sit here 2 years later with very little tangible evidence that those intentions have been implemented through the regulator. However, it has not an option to rush our hands of that issue. We cannot just accept that ICASA has been put in a position where it is not able to perform in the way that it is anticipated or expected. We know that the consumers are bearing the brunt of a lot of what is happening at the regulator, with reference particularly to those three sets of regulations, which are consumer benefits. There are a large number of critical pro-competitive interventions which are currently languishing, chief amongst these local deep and banking, but also carrier pre-select, the access framework, that's interconnection, facilities leasing, the list of essential facilities, and this is critically for the introduction of new services and competition spectrum assignment. And it is also true that there has been an unacceptable lack of progress in furthering those pro-competitive interventions. Now, that's a big issue with what we have to be a lack of transparency as regards industry and certainly consumers. This kind of regard consumers is being central to ICASA's mandate, and industry also being central to it. And we are surprised by what we regard as a failure of the regulator to communicate properly with other consumers or industry. ICASA has noted that in recent times the Department of Communications has taken up its rightful place as a policy initiator and a leader of policy. And we note that this committee is obviously also taking its oversight and legislative duties very seriously. But we would make the point that however strong those two entities are, and whatever the outcome of this process, it remains critical to have a regulator which is effective and which is strong and which is independent. As I mentioned before, we are particularly concerned about the local leap and bundling process, which we have limited information on, but which we believe to be currently stalled also at the Chapter 10 stage. It is a far, far, far more complex intervention than the one we are currently dealing with. NTR is about a rate. It's actually a fairly simple intervention. Local leap unbundling is a completely different kettle of fish and something that we're going to have to pay attention to very, very soon. There's another related pricing intervention on end-to-end lease lines, and it's an interesting intervention because the mobile networks have publicly pointed to the cost of those end-to-end lease lines which they are forced to lease from Telkom or have historically been forced to lease from Telkom as being one of the major components of the retail price of cellular communications. So Can on this portfolio committee and the department in implementing the performance management system, which is due to be implemented under the APACA Act, to properly assess the capacity and budgetary needs of the ICASA within the context of the deliverables required by the ECA. It seems apparent that ICASA is not geared towards those deliverables. That is apparent from the struggles that we are experiencing in actually delivering them. And we would concentrate on this portfolio committee not to shine a bright spotlight on MTR and then to leave industry and others in the darkness thereafter, but to continue to maintain oversight and to continue to ensure that there is transparency and accountability to consumers and industry. Once again, thank you, and we welcome your questions.
Thank you very much. Question? Are you all happy?
There's a strong emphasis in your input on anti-competitive behavior. Have you put those views forward to the competition board? And if so, what has their response been? Because clearly, you know, there's certain things that can be done at a policy level as far as that's concerned. But there is a mechanism to deal with that, and did appear here. And I'm just interested to know whether you engage with them and if they've responded to you negatively or positively about the issues you've raised here about anti-competitive behavior.
We haven't lodged a formal complaint to the Competition Commission on this particular issue. However, we have detailed extensively a lot of the competitive issues relating to interconnection in our submissions to ICASA. I think that from a competition perspective, we would like to see the outcome of the current processes run their course before approaching the Competition Commission specifically on that. It has historically lodged a number of complaints to the Competition Commission, but on other issues.
And just to what my colleague has said, none of those complaints which have been lodged with the Competition Commission since, I think, 2001 have been finalized. My records are from the top of the concurrent jurisdiction issues between the ICASA and the Competition Commission, which we trust are now sorted out. But Telkom has regards complaints against Telkom for anti-competitive conduct. Telkom has taken the decision of the Competition Commission on review to the SACRAFT and the High Court, where they in fact were successful. And as I understand it, that matter is now on appeal, and there will be no finalization of the complaint until that appeal is finalized.
Thanks, sir. I can see on the statement by the regulator that, as we've indicated, that we are participating in that process of moral situation. But you tend to have your own doubts with the council, which you are part of, that you are fully engaged or fully participating. I cannot elaborate on that because I don't understand exactly. You are part of the process. But it was defined by the end of process itself, what exactly happened.
Absolutely. That is a great encapsulation of the situation and one which we've expressed to the regulator. While we are initially invited to participate in the process, it was on the understanding that it's probably an entity which would be positioned to defeat accusations of collusion. We have no interest in high MTRs, and we have no interest in pandering to the needs of the mobile network operators in that regard. However, it became evident somewhat early in the process that there was a difficulty with competition for issues, and that the operators had been advised that they should not speak to specifics, particularly to specific rates, in the absence of a written opinion from the Competition Commission that would not amount to criminal collusion under the Competition Act as amended. That type of us in a position where, as I noted, we essentially have a watching brief. So I have already tied into what is being talked about in the bilateral meetings which are taking place in terms of the law as it currently exists. So while I'm not concerned that they are being want to lend legitimacy to a process where perhaps that's not warranted. We have, however, taken a view that we wish to support the regulator in its initiative. We wish to support any initiative aimed at bringing down mobile termination rates. And accordingly, we have continued to participate in this. We have also made it clear that the next scheduled meeting on the 23rd of October, that unless there is a concrete, tangible evidence of progress in reaching a proposal to reduce mobile termination rates, that we will no longer participate in that process.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask the presenter. I see on your presentation on relationship between wholesale and retail rates, both 32, that you are warning against the watershed effect. And something has to go up if interconnecting fees are reduced. Does this mean that there will be a need to be retail rate regulations to ensure that the reduction in termination rates is passed on to consumers?
I think through time, there's where there's a lot of competition in the market, one can logically draw the conclusion that a reduction in wholesale tariffs will result in a reduction in retail tariffs. Unfortunately, there are various pro-competitive processes that haven't yet run their courses. And we've mentioned the local unbundling, carrier pre-select and so forth. And in the absence of those processes running to conclusion, There is a very real risk that a reduction of mobile termination rates on its own might not have a direct impact on the retail tariffs that mobile users pay to call each other.
Honourable Member, if I can just supplement that, there is also a danger that because we have a number of parallel processes in place, and I'll take an example, that for example, Canada has actually come out of a crisis more persuasion approach, which I have judgment on for now, thank you. In which sense that the market they need to be used to X, and thereafter the regular glide path down to Y over a Z number of months or years. But the market has become, as a product, been tackled to do six uncertainty in that regard. And they kind of an outside intervention with regard to their powers trying to cost of the reduction in the wholesale rates, and not of the danger.
So, good one. Something very quickly. You see, on your presentation, you talk about the directive from DOC, the 95 cents each. Understand, you see, I just, if you can help me to understand. I've got the ICASA media release statement. Cost base not exceeding 50%. You've got the 95 cents from the DOC. But I'm if it's there on the policy directive, I've not seen the policy directive myself. And that is the case, but DOC still need to clarify. ICASA says it's 40 cents, the cost base. Then it will be the 50%, which to me, if that is the case, is correct, because our research, it won't reach 95 cents, if the policy directive is 95 cents, containing 95 cents as a price and so on. Now, what's your take?
Honourable Member, I'm more than happy to speak to you in this regard. I think that the 95 cents figure would be an initial figure in a guide path, which will then reduce down perhaps to 40 cents over time. So we don't know what DOC's intention is or whether it feels it's advisable to change the flow further than to stipulate the initial cut. So we are currently saying 40 cents off an end result. Where the DOC is saying 95 cents, I would presume that that is an initial cut. and example, certainly one which we would like to see go a little deeper initially.
So, we came here from the DOC, but I wanted to conclude. Any questions with Ishtar? Thank you very much, Ishtar, for your participation. Didi, you want to ask a question? Yeah?
We had a very good presentation a little earlier about being mindful that we shouldn't just go for the cost of an cost, base cost. But that we should look at benchmarking to make sure that we get effective operator costs, because otherwise consumers are lumped with all the inefficiencies of certain operators. Would you concur with that? Do you represent smaller licensees who would really like to operate on sort of in a lean and mean team? Could you please just elaborate?
I think there's a very real risk that if you request costs from operators who are currently in a position where a lot of their revenue is threatened, that the figures you get and the manner in which they have been presented might take into account the pressures of the situation. I think, on the other hand, if you were to look at the cost of an efficient operator, it would probably be a lot easier to come to those figures, and there would be fewer external factors affecting potential accuracy of those figures. There's international benchmarking that can be done to assist. It would certainly be a lot easier to work on the basis of an efficient operator. From our members' perspective, I think that a lot of them are very frustrated that they managed to make calls in their networks for a fraction of the cost of what mobile network is terminating. And it's particularly interesting that a number of our members in negotiations with mobile networks, where the mobile networks have said, right, these are our tariffs, they have refused in many instances to accept our members' tariffs being above one third of their own. I'm not sure how they've come to that conclusion, but presumably they base that the technology we're using has certain efficiencies, and but it's an inconsistency, and I think that certainly efficiency would be a much easier way of coming to a figure.
Thank you. Sorry, Sunday.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just very briefly, there has been repeat accusation here today that the DOC had proposed 95 cents as a reasonable mobile termination rate. That is factually incorrect. We have not proposed an amount of 95 cents. In fact, the figure we had put on the table was much lower. The department actually did get an offer of 98 cents from one of the operators, and we felt that it is not a good enough offer. Hence the breakdown in the negotiation. So 95% is definitely much more than what we had felt was an initial cut. And correctly, yes, we had anticipated that there'd be an initial cut and then there'd be a glide path to cost within a 24-month period. But obviously we could not reach agreement with regard to that. Hence, the process we've now adopted of going through the route of a policy direction. And copies will be made available of the policy direction to all members this afternoon so that you can have sight of it. And to what's proposed in the policy direction.
Thank you. That clarifies matters. Thank you very much. I thought the tea would be ready, but they don't seem to be outside. So can we then call upon Professor Jane Duncan, Highway Africa, and her team. No, the tea is not ready.
Very well. I like to see consistency. Inconsistency. Our members are 4, 6, 8, 1, and 25. The mobile network is 24, 1, 3, 7, 2, 3, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4, 8, 4,
I just maybe seeing as the DG gave an input, you know, it may be very good that the Parton makes a statement. I mean, the fact of the matter is we sit here for 6-7 hours discussing the matter, thinking that there's a policy direction because the newspaper said so. And I think the department should make a statement and clearly state that that's not their position, and state what the right position is, so that we don't create further confusion. It'll be, and also, of course, we need the direction. But I really think the problem is, it's now been a whole day that it's been in the public domain that this is on the table. And now we hear it's not on the table. So it's very vital that we make it up. Get a press statement out and say it's not true. That'll just be a suggestion, Chair.
If I we do welcome the suggestion, but I think we have repeatedly clarified that situation on two interviews that were undertaken by myself and one by the Minister, where we indicated that we had not put forth any specific figures to the public. The only figures that were presented were to the mobile operators. But the recommendation will obviously be taken on board and will be discussed with the Minister. But we will clarify the situation. But I felt it was important for the sitting to have that clarity as well. Thank you.
Are you ready?
She's ready. Alright, I would suggest that we adjourn for a tea and coffee break while we get the technical people to help out here. It seems to be some problem. And we'll reconvene at about 4:05, please. Professor James Duncan, you're going to have to spend a minute or two explaining now in what capacity, where you are, etc. Most people don't know that, and then you can introduce your team to us.
Thank you very much. I'm no longer with the Freedom of Expression Institute. I'm the Highway Africa Chair of Media and Information Society, which is a chair that is based in the School of Journalism and Media Studies at Rhodes University. So I'm now a resident of the Eastern Cape rather than Harting. I'm joined by two colleagues who are also going to be giving inputs on the particular question that the Portfolio Committee is addressing today. On my left is Mr. Kayaletu Tonjeni, who is the school's outreach officer of the School of Journalism and Media Studies at Rhodes University. And then on my extreme left is Svenzile Tsankobe, who is representing the Unemployed People's Movement. And the reason why we've invited the UPM here is they participated in the survey that we've done of the impact of communication costs. We wanted to also give the committee an opportunity to interact with a representative of the Unemployed People's Movement directly about issues that affect unemployed people. Now what we did was, I think we did something slightly different to what many of the people who've been addressing you today have done. What we decided to do was conduct a survey of the impact of communication costs on residents of the very locality in which we're based, which is Igwini, or otherwise known as Grahamstown. There is a debate going on around name change at the moment, so we've decided to preempt the finalization of that debate and associate ourselves with a new name. And what the survey does is in a sense, to focus on the social impact of high communication costs. I think many people have been addressing you on the technical aspects of interconnection, and specifically the cost questions of interconnection. But we don't purport to be experts on that particular question. What we want to address is specifically the social impact of communication costs. And even more specifically, what we want to try and explore, or we have tried to explore through the survey, is the social implications of people not being able to participate fully in the information society. What are the implications if people cannot afford the cost of communications? What are the implications for developing an inclusive information society, which is obviously one of the objectives that we're striving for as a country? And even more specifically, we asked questions of the people who we surveyed of what is the human cost for you of finding it difficult to afford specifically cell phone airtime. Now, obviously, we had very little time to actually undertake the survey, and we don't claim that the survey is representative. It's rather indicative of the kind of problems that exist out there, particularly in one of the poorest provinces in the country, the Eastern Cape. So we only managed to touch 100 residents over a period of 1.5 days, and we used some very willing students from the Department of Journalism and Media Studies, journalism students, in order to undertake the survey. And in addition to that, we also ran two focus groups with members of the Unemployed People's Movement. So that's where we are in the Eastern Cape. This is Irini. Irini. Excuse my pronunciation. Go
ahead. Thank you to my colleague, and good afternoon, everyone in the house. I think we kind of looked at the town of Grahamstown, more focused on the parts that are outside the town, the peripheries, so the township. We went to Fingo, the oldest village, which is part of Ekhimi, and Tanki, the second oldest. But we also touched another area called Chalane, which is an informal settlement which has been there for the past 4 to 5 years. And last but not least, we went to Extension 4 and 8, where you could find a mix of houses there, definitely mortar and brick houses, whilst the other previous areas I pointed to are mud and stick structures. So this would be your example maybe of the Extension 4 and 5, whilst the latest one, the last one, 6 and 7, is the RDC structures that are relatively new. We went out to ask the questions, at least 10 questions to the people, checking what types of phones they are using, whether they are prepaid on contract, and the percentage they could, or they say they could, they use in an average week or ultimately a month on their cell phones. And also checked on the services like SMS, voice calls, please call me, missed calls, etc. And we asked also how affordable is the cost of handsets and renting cell phone services, or maybe to buy airtime. And then we started to ask how the cost of airtime has affected their ability to communicate with important people, like within the immediate family, potential employer, etc. We asked if there has been any particular important things that they have been unable to do owing to the cost of airtime, and they responded. We further asked what do they feel about the quality of service they are getting out of their cell phone operators. And then we lastly invited them to give any submission, any advice they could give to the committee in terms of the proposal that the public must suggest what should be done in terms of the high cost of cell phones. So in trying to break down, we managed to talk to 100 homesteads. We found that a considerable chunk is between 18 and 25, and the second biggest group is between 26 years and 35 years, the third one following that chronology, with the smallest chunk being the old age between 76 and 8 years, as the pie chart illustrates. Sorry. Just to put
just to get a little bit deeper more into the demographics, we've discovered that almost 40% of our participants were unemployed, following after that the employed group at 35 or 34%, students, as we are a student town, and ultimately the pensioners standing down at almost 12%. We also noted that a considerable proportion of our survey was made up of women. You wouldn't be surprised, because they are in the majority at national level as well. We found that also a very small proportion of these participants are on contract. A big chunk of them are using prepaid services. And we checked their access to cell phones. We found that a considerable portion, almost 3/4, are having cell phones, and then just almost 1/4 are having a landline, and then just a small pie, approximately something like 5 or 7%, have got landlines and cell phones. We checked what they actually use for these cell phones. It was interesting to note that almost 90% of them are using voice calls, but alternatively we've got up to 53% of them using SMSs and 20% using missed calls. Okay, not to forget the please call me standing in at 40%, and then a little chunk at almost 7% or 6% using data services. We asked the question about the affordability of cell phone handsets and also the airtime. Or on the cell phone, we found that almost 60 or 57% felt that the cell phone handsets were very expensive, whilst almost 28 felt that they were affordable, and a very low proportion, approximately 3 to 4% are saying they are cheap. And airtime was also similar to that pattern, but a little bit more in terms of numbers, felt that the airtime was a lot more affordable than the cell phone handset. We asked them about the quality of service. We got a variety of responses, but the big response was that they are getting not so good services. The cell phones, the call are terminated before they could finish. They can go on for a day without a cell phone network, and also the cell phone handsets they are using are also a factor into this bad service they were referring to. I will take this opportunity now to hand over again to Jane to finish this other part of the presentation. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Well, this should give you an indication of how much people estimated they were spending of their gross income on airtime. And the residents of Singo estimated that they were spending in the region of 15%, Kalani over 25%, which was in the region of 28%. Kanchi, over 30% of income was being spent on airtime, and Extension 6, 26%. We unfortunately didn't manage to get figures for Extension 4 and 8. The majority of people, I think, were fairly forthcoming on this particular question. We didn't know whether people were going to be forthcoming on the question of their family incomes. But once we explained the reasons why we wanted these particular figures, most people were generally forthcoming. So in total, what we found was that just under 26% of gross income was being spent on airtime. Now, if one looks at how Edini compares to the ICT Development Index measures of affordability of ICT, they've looked at an average ICT price basket and found that developed countries spend between 0 and 3% of gross national income on ICT. But the top 25 countries only spend between 0.4 and 0.6% of gross national income. The bottom 25% of countries, however, spend between 40 and 72% of gross national income. So if we place Ebini in that particular picture, we can see that it's certainly not at the bottom, but it's too close to
the lower part of this particular measurement for compass. And then we identified some communication usage trends that came out of our particular survey. The first one was that landlines were virtually non-existent. Very, very few households, in fact, had landlines. And the overwhelming reason that was given for why households don't have landlines is because they're too expensive. And this is not because households didn't want landlines. We found that often people felt that if they had a choice, they would want both landlines and cell phones, because landlines give a feeling of stability and dignity to a family. They give a feeling that a house, in fact, is a home. And often, if there are cell phones in the family, then you find that younger members of the family will take the cell phone out of the house, which will leave people in the house who are often overwhelmingly older people and children stranded in the house without a means to communicate. So people who we surveyed definitely would want landlines in their residences. And then the next general trend that we tended to find is that cell phones tend to be used mainly as receiving devices for calls. So often people kept their cell phones on in the hope that prospective employers would phone them, for instance. And the other major use of cell phones was to send "please call me." We also tended to find that people personalized their "please call me" a lot in order to communicate particular messages. There was one resident who spoke, for instance, about personalizing his "please call me" using "I love you" in order to communicate his affection to his girlfriend. So that was quite a popular use of personalized "please call me." But there's also a grievance that has been raised in the survey that it seems like the network operators are reducing the number of personalized "please call me" that you can actually send, which in turn is impacting on people's ability to communicate. Also, there seems to be a general trend coming out that cell phones are not really used to converse. Using cell phones to hold a conversation seems to be largely a luxury that is out of reach of many people, which raises some fairly serious and fundamental questions about the impact of cell phone penetration on the ability of people to communicate, whether in fact cell phone penetration is promoting the right to receive or impart information or ideas. We also tended to find that women were most heavily affected by the problem of high cell phone airtime. For instance, there was one person who was surveyed, a granny, who had complained about the fact that she was left with seven children to take care of. One of the older children left with the cell phone. There was only one cell phone in the family, and that would leave her without any form of communication. And she expressed a concern that when problems do emerge with children, if there's a crisis situation, for instance, she's unable to communicate with this particular about this particular problem. A fairly disturbing issue that was communicated to us in the course of the survey is that people are actually unaware that they have a right to affordable access to communications, that the ECA does promote universality as a key objective of the sector. Now, obviously, universality has three elements to it: affordability, availability, and accessibility. People are often not aware of the fact that universality is a key objective and a right, in fact, that people have ways of claiming and enforcing. In fact, one of the comments that was made to us in the course of the survey was that people were surprised that the portfolio committee hearing was even taking place, because they were under the impression that the cost of cell phone airtime can't be changed because it's the law. So it is in effect something that was beyond the reach of even the portfolio committee to do something about. The next issue that came to our attention is that people who carry cell phones are often at high risk of crime. Just recently, an ANC Youth League leader was killed for his cell phone. And these occurrences
are, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're regular, but there are certainly very high levels of crime that accompany people carrying cell phones. And what it means is that if people are dispossessed of their cell phones through crime, families, whole families can lose the ability to communicate. The other very serious grievance that was brought out during the course of the survey, which we were asked to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee, is that often the airtime is for smaller amounts. So the two rand, 5 rand, and even the 10 rand airtime is bought mainly by the people who we surveyed. But the spaza shops often put a markup on the airtime, which affects affordability. So many people, if they buy from the spaza shops, for instance, are made to pay 5 rand 50 or 6 rand. And this has become a very serious grievance that people have raised with us. Why should they be paying extra for airtime? What is the social impact of the kind of information that came out? We've speculated here on some of the social impacts. Some people who were surveyed, for instance, spoke about a breakdown in family communication leading to friction. Some people cited, for instance, the inability to communicate enough about not being able to go to a funeral, which impacted quite heavily on relationships in families and amongst friends. There were some families who said that they even used food money just in order to stay connected. Some people complained that the problem actually frustrates their ability to talk to officials. Even if they're phoning on toll-free lines, you may get put on hold for minutes and minutes, and your airtime runs out before you're actually able to complete the call, and this was cited as a frustration. Very disturbingly, some people in the survey cited the inability to call during emergencies. Some people spoke about deaths in the family that they were unable to communicate about because of this particular problem. Another problem, which was touched on, which I mentioned earlier, which is that the elderly may be stranded at home without any means of communication. Learners complained about the inability to make important calls about study opportunities and to be able to seize opportunities when they came about. The unemployed complained about missing job opportunities. And in fact, one quote that we've included here, which came from one of the focus groups of the Unemployed People's Movement, is that they said that the inability to communicate is like a disease that will disable you to reach a certain point in life, because once you miss some opportunities in life, they will never come back, at least for as long as you live. And I just wanted to hand over to the representative of the Unemployed People's Movement to speak for a few minutes about how the movement actually sees the cost of communications.
Duncan. Professor Duncan is correct when she introduces me as a student in the Frank Albert, hailing from Queenstown in the Eastern Cape, Magara Municipality, representing the Unemployed People's Movement. UPM is your acronym. My presentation, Chairperson, is going to be different from that presentation that has been presented here, because I'm the representative of the unprofessional sector. People are frustrated. And I understand the process to give some of us the best health devices as Duncan and Mary, Professor Duncan. The part of parenthood is a serious issue, Chairperson. It needs to be addressed as a matter of extreme urgency. It doesn't have to be subjected to long, drawn-out processes. And as I know, the profession, the other one should decrease their rates, so that it will set tomorrow. It should not get on tomorrow. The most of the time, the potential employers have to person to convert the employer for further detail.
Okay.
In relation to the application for that particular bank, for that particular bank in Thai, the person is very jobless. The employer can also convert the call to secure the job for themselves because they are not resourceful. Therefore, chances are to present an opportunity that could secure the benefit of the correct mutual and ability to communicate. The person in high position, the knowledge should have been challenging. I want to reflect on my personal experiences. Just for example, if you can see that the children, this type of man, the children, I want to call to the children to get engaged. They can have the ability and have the possibility to take time. Because the children, the own power, they are the children, when one of them can announce what's going to happen in their position.
Thank you.
I won't go through all of the recommendations that were put to the portfolio committee in the recommendations that we gathered in the course of the survey. They are included on our written submission. I'll just give you a sample of some of the recommendations. Firstly, to regulate the airtime prices through legislation and to make it affordable for prepaid users. We're just reflecting here directly what people said, sentiments that we gathered through the survey. There's a need to regulate the barber shop owners. There's a need for more off-peak hours, a need to reduce retail prices by 40% to 50%. There's a need to investigate the airtime price fixing and increase the weekend discount window. There should be discounts during the week. There's a need to introduce free hours. There's a need for an adjustment in interconnection rates, which must be done this year, not next year. There's a need to decrease the rates for people dependent on government grants. Phones should be user-friendly for older people. The cost of the SMS should be reduced, and that emergency calls should be free. Now, just before I get onto this reality check, I just want to speak very directly to the proposal that's been made by the Portfolio Committee on interconnection rates. I think what came out of the survey was that there's general support. In fact, I'd probably say fairly overwhelming support for the committee's proposal to reduce interconnection rates. So if Rini says strength to your arms, it needs to be done this year and, in fact, by tomorrow. Any relief will help. But there's a caveat to that, and the caveat is that the reduction in interconnection rates has to result in lower retail rates. It would be perverse for interconnection rates to be raised and for interconnection rates to be lowered and for retail rates to be raised. So it has to result in a significant reduction in retail rates. The second point that I think came through is that there's also a need to address on-network rates, because many, if not most, of the people who we surveyed were MTN subscribers. So many calls that were being made were MTN to MTN. And that there's a need to ensure that such calls, on-network calls, also become affordable as well. The third issue that we just wanted to highlight was that I see that there's been a sentiment expressed that if interconnection rates are reduced, Vodacom and MTN will be the biggest losers and Telkom will gain. Well, if that is the case, then we think that it's quite important that Telkom needs to be held to its universality objectives. It's quite disturbing to see that since the imposition of universal service and access objectives on Telkom in the mid to late 1990s, there's been not just a stagnation but a shrinkage of the fixed nine-line network. And that's problematic for a range of reasons. One of the reasons being that I think for some time to come, a broadband will be rolled out through the fixed line network. But I think it's been brought home to us in the course of the survey that people want fixed lines in their homes. And I think we need to revisit the problems that have bedeviled the rollout of the fixed line network, and not just simply lapse into an uncritical celebration of mobile penetration as a solution to the problem of connectivity. I think we need to think a lot more broadly than that and address the Telkom question and the fixed line question once again. And then just to turn to this reality check, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, the government released the latest South African development indicators. And in terms of those indicators, according to one of the indices that was cited, which is the Knowledge-Based Economy Index, South Africa has dropped from 49 in 1995 to 55 in 2008 out of 140 countries.
So in terms of this index, in terms of attainment of the knowledge economy and the information society, we seem to be going backwards rather than forwards, and I think that should be a concern for us. The report also notes that other countries seem to be advancing faster than South Africa, including in relation to rollout of ICT infrastructure, and that because of this, it seems to be a compelling argument to make that bringing down the communication costs and attending to affordability as a crucial aspect of universality is a national imperative. Okay, we're done.
Thank you very much. This was a very interesting presentation. You know, what it shows is that ordinary people are not unmindful of these things. They've got an acute sense of, they might not be able to articulate it in a scientific way and research and facts and figures and all that. But their gut feeling tells them that we should have got a problem there.
Yeah.
I think this is very useful to get a grassroots insight. And you know, the more I listen to this, the more I feel that it's really a wake-up call for ICASA. It's really, really a wake-up call for ICASA. I mean, there's a car out there, you can hear it. And we're hoping that, you know, very, very soon this matter will receive the kind of attention that it deserves. I know we are not yet to discuss ICASA, but I really feel that it's letting the nation down on this one. Some of it open for questions. So now I want to know that, Nikki, when you send me a please call me, you actually mean you love me. Questions? Thank you very much. I think you've got that. The silence doesn't mean that people have not understood. I think they've understood what you're saying. Thank you very much. All right, Donna.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your presentation. I've no question, but I do have a comment. Those of us that can go to big shopping centres like Pick n Pay, and we can get extra chances on our airtime, we can buy and we can add more airtime from Pick n Pay, and smaller cargo shops cannot do this, and they are charging the people their markup fees. That markup fees need to be paid by the operators, because those small cargo shops are selling it for them, and they should pay those markup fees, because they are making the profit. And I think the ground people on the ground should not pay those market fees.
Thanks. I think that's a very useful comment. In fact, in my former life at the FXI, we were actually brought a complaint by members of the Ramaluti community in the Free State, who were complaining about this particular markup fee. We actually took the matter to ICASA. And somebody from the consumer advice section of ICASA actually cautioned the people who were complaining about taking on this particular matter head on. Because they complained, they made the observation that if you deny the cyber shops the markup, then you may actually end up doing something that's self-defeating, because you may drive the cyber shops out of business, which forces people to actually travel greater distances in order to go into town in order to buy airtime. And I think that the proposal you're making would actually speak to that particular problem, practically how to resolve it.
I think you have noticed that today I haven't spoken very much, but I'm touched by that house. That she is on that. It reminds me of a house where in which I grew. It looks more like a house in Staterheim where I grew up. But I just wanted to say, Chairperson, It's a pity that we never looked at this presentation. This should have preceded all the presentations, I think, in the morning. It could have given us, you know, an intonation of what is happening on the ground. And all the other people who have given us such presentations this time and some arguments arose, this could have helped a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Jane Duncan and the team. Thank you very much. Can we now get the next greeting? It's Edwin. Am I getting it right? Edwin. This is the last presentation for the day.
No, it was great. It was great.
South Africa. Shana will do the presentation for us and then we'll do the questions and answer sessions afterwards. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We've done a survey of mobile termination rates independently as opposed to the viewpoints given by the mobile operators and independent analysts, right? Based on the comments that have been made on the interconnection rate thus far, the consequences of the current interconnection rate have been that it's, one, adversely impacted the South African economy. It's limited access to telecommunication services by the poor and marginalized, and limited competition to from smaller operators. We've looked at the different statements put out by the PCC in their request for comments, and we've given our own comments on these statements. The current, I'll comment on the current interconnection rate. There have been many previous studies done to analyze the cost of telecommunications in South Africa. Most of these analysis is carried out by third-party companies that do research, as well as larger bodies like the IGU and independently by the mobile operators. What we found is when independent research organizations that favor the drop in interconnection rates do a study, they normally pick a basket of countries where South Africa normally fares very badly or seems to have high interconnection rates. For example, a number of people have been referring to a study that uses Brazil, India, South Korea, and so on. In that study, South Africa compares unfavorably. While there are studies done by mobile operators, including similar debates that took place in Europe, where mobile operators carry out studies, and they show that their interconnect rates compare favorably according to their basket of countries. And And many of these studies also don't consider the impact of Telkom's fixed line monopoly on the cost of telecommunications services in South Africa. We looked at a study done by the IDU that looked at 150 countries around the world and compared South Africa when it comes to provision of fixed line services, mobile cellular services, and fixed broadband services. And in the 2009 survey, South Africa was ranked number 70 overall compared to 150 countries. In this survey, South Africa is more or less in between the best countries in the world and the worst countries in the world when it comes to provision of telecommunication services. However, if you look at how South Africa compares with regards to the different types of services, when it comes to mobile cellular services, we are ranked number 3. When the ITU also ranked the country, they also looked at the gross national income per capita for each country. And in some cases, even though we rank average when it comes to mobile cellular services, a large number of countries with a lower gross national income per capita were ranked higher than South Africa. Other contributing factors that resulted in South Africa's ranking being much lower was fixed line services. Our access to fixed line services over the past decade has actually decreased. However, our ranking when it came to broadband internet services seems to have improved from the past, possibly due to the fact that there is intense competition when it comes to providing internet services in South Africa. The historically high interconnect rate in South Africa, from our viewpoint, has had a number of contributing factors. One is lack of competition in the fixed line market until recently. The inability of mobile operators and previous band licensees to self-provide their own transmission infrastructure. Delay in liberalization of the telecommunication market. High cost of transmission facilities from the incumbent fixed line operator. And the delay in providing services like carrier pre-select in both the fixed line and mobile environments. Getting back to the point on the high cost of leasing transmission facilities, this is one of the high costs that impact us as a company as well. The current cost that we have for transmission facilities, let's say if we needed 6 megabits of bandwidth between Johannesburg and Durban, it would be about 60,000 rand per month. An equivalent of VPN service in the Johannesburg area for about 8 megabits of capacity between 3 sites would cost us more or less about 60,000 rand per month. But yesterday I noticed an article, a press release from Telkom on an international link from South Africa to London, which provided 134 megabits of capacity. If I took the 1 year lease cost and divided by 12, it came down to less than 60,000 rand. So essentially, I'm paying more for connecting local sites together than for connecting the local sites to London. Might even be cheaper to have my traffic go to London and come back to South Africa. Other factors that have impacted the high cost of telecommunications in South Africa include the delay in unbundling of the local loop, delay in introduction of full number portability in the fixed line market. Another factor that affects cost of telecommunications is the unavailability of toll-free services across all telecommunications providers. For example, the 0800 toll-free services are currently only available on Telkom. If I phone an 0800 number from a mobile phone, I'm paying my current cellular rate. It's only recently with the parliamentary hotline did a toll-free service become available across more than one telecommunications operator. High cost and initial guarantees from the current established operators also hamper competition in South Africa. cost of communications. A survey of mobile cellular subscriptions in South Africa shows that the access to mobile services has increased from 29.4 subscriptions per 100 inhabitants in 2002 up to 87 subscriptions per 100 inhabitants in 2007. Recent reports indicate that we have reached 100% penetration. However, a study by Mobility 2009 by an independent research organization suggests that of the 100-odd% penetration, only 60% of the subscriptions represent individual users, because many users have multiple SIM cards. Mobile services, however, have helped South Africa in some respects in that it provides access to the internet via narrowband and broadband services in many areas where fixed line communications is not available. And according to the ITU, the number of fixed line telephones in South Africa has decreased from 10.4 lines per 100 inhabitants in 2002 to 9.6 lines per 100 in 2007. This is an important point for the BCC to also consider, because even if we were to reduce the cost of interconnect with telecom benefits and able to provide lower cost communication services when it comes to mobile calls from telecom to the mobile operators, many South Africans don't have access to a telecom line to benefit from reduced rates from telecom. If majority of the coverage for mobile communications is provided by MTN and Vodacom in South Africa, if they don't reduce the rate of a rate that consumers pay, South Africans wouldn't benefit. Various technologies are available to provide services, fixed line communication services in rural areas. Despite copper cabling being stolen, mobile operators have been successful using microwave and other technologies to provide wireless communications in remote areas. Fixed line operators also have alternative technologies like wireless local loop and fixed mobile to provide communications in rural areas. However, it doesn't seem to have been exploited to date in South Africa. However, many people in South Africa rely on the cell phone to run small and micro enterprises, including internet access from 3G modem. CSPs today provide people in certain areas with a means to provide to make low-cost calls as an alternative to using their normal cell phones. These cost routing equipment has created business opportunities for entrepreneurs where small, medium, and large customers use business customers use LCRs to reduce their telecommunications costs. The impact of the interconnection rate. We would like the PCC to consider the following when considering the reduction in an immediate reduction in the mobile termination rate. One, TFCs currently charge callers 90 cents per minute to make a telephone call. If the mobile termination rate were to be reduced drastically to say 60 cents, and the cost of calls from cell phone were much lower, it would negatively impact CSP operators, especially if you can make an 80 cents call from your cell phone and the CSP operator would charge 90 cents for a cell phone call. In effect, it would be necessary for the cost of CSP calls to be reduced initially before the consumer rate of CSP, before the consumer rate of cell phone calls is reduced. The CSP rate should actually be lower than the call of the consumer rate for call from cell phone. These cost routing provides businesses with an alternative method to circumvent the high cost of calls to mobile via fixed line operators, and this has created a business opportunity for many entrepreneurs. An immediate reduction in the interconnect rate might impact LTR operators and the need to be time to allow the LTR operators to migrate to alternative interconnect methods, for example, direct interconnect to the mobile operators to take advantage of the lower interconnect rates. A number of entrepreneurs have also partnered with mobile operators to provide value-added voice services. These include IVR services, conference bridging services, voice to email, and so on. And this is an area where we generate our revenue. The interconnect revenue generated by a mobile operator, some of it is passed on to these entrepreneurs to run their services. In this case, we would require some time to migrate our services and not be dependent on the interconnect rate from mobile operators or on the revenue share model from mobile operators. Regarding the proposal from the PCC, these are our comments. A reduction in the interconnect rate may not necessarily result in a reduction in the cost of calls for consumers. Currently, the on-net cost is more expensive than the interconnect rate of 1.25, and these calls don't incur interconnect charges. A reduction in the interconnect rate may have the following consequences as well. Mobile operators will increase their costs on other products and services, the waterbed effect. One way to mitigate the waterbed effect would be increased competition in the market. Customers receive more calls than they receive may become commercially unattractive to mobile operators. However, one way to address this would be to have competing operators available to take on these customers. And these customers might be of interest to other operators. Some voice over IP providers have suggested that a reduction in the interconnect rate will allow them to provide all-you-can-eat packages. But one fact to bear in mind is this might lead to an increase in unsolicited telephone calls from telemarketers and pranksters. Mobile operators currently have base stations in rural areas where the return on investment on these base stations is very long. In some cases, the return on investment is 5 to 10 years old. They might not even have a return on investment. It might result in mobile operators decommissioning these base stations, which would inadvertently result in mobile penetration decreasing and following the trend with fixed line communications. We would need competition in rural areas to ensure that if mobile operators were to decommission their services in these areas, competitors are available to take on the customers that are left stranded. There have also been a number of reports on the interconnect rate reduction in Namibia. It wouldn't be fair to use the Namibian Interconnect Benchmark Study as a reason to reduce the interconnect rate in South Africa. There are a number of reasons. One, Namibia has a much lower penetration rate when it comes to mobile subscriptions as compared to South Africa. And one, Namibia has had MTC in Namibia as the sole provider of telecommunications of mobile services until recently. And a competitor for mobile communications has only been introduced recently. At present, MTC Namibia has an 87.4% market share. As a result, the reduction in the interconnect rate hasn't had a significant impact on the reduction in the consumer rate in Namibia, according to some reports. Some proponents of lower mobile interconnect rates also seem to be targeting business customers and residential estates rather than people in underserved areas. A reduction in interconnect rates might also result in mobile operators charging smaller telecommunications providers other ancillary fees. This is a practice already applied by some voice over IP service providers, where they charge an interconnect party additional fees, for example, for the bandwidth that they would use on the infrastructure, as well as port fees on the equipment. We've looked at different methods of on how we can bring down the cost of telecommunications in South Africa. These are some of our proposals. One is, the interconnect rate should be a capped rate rather than a fixed rate as it is currently. This can be made effective immediately. So rather than having a fixed rate of 1.25, you could meet overnight cap it at 1.25. Mobile operators would be free to reduce that the interconnect rate between interconnect partners independently. This would also help to substantiate collusion in the future if the Competition Commission doesn't see a reduction or differentiation in interconnect rates. The long-term interconnect rate between established operators should be symmetrical rather than asymmetrical. The impact of converting 400 band licenses into ECNS and ECS licenses needs to be evaluated over the next few years. And it needs to be considered whether these license convergence has had an impact on competition in South Africa. The mobile termination rate should be reduced or discounted based on the volume of traffic a mobile operator receives from an interconnect partner. For example, currently, Vodacom charges Telkom 1.25. Likewise, a smaller operator like ourselves, if we were to connect to Vodacom, we would be charged the same rate. Unfortunately, we would be asked for large guarantees and to commit to a volume of minutes to be routed into the mobile operators, which we are unable to commit to at present. However, if we were to transit our traffic via a third-party operator who has discounted rates for the volume of traffic, it would become more lucrative for us to route our traffic via third-party operators than to connect directly to the incumbent mobile operators. ICASA should consider allocating more wireless and mobile spectrum licenses to underserved areas to increase competition, possibly in the event where mobile operators decide to reduce their presence in underserved areas. The rollout of CFT terminals needs to be increased, especially with, to make communications more affordable in underserved areas. Another concept to look at would be calls to underserved areas should be charged at different rates. A concept used by European mobile operators is called the home zone, where mobile customers who reside in the area that they define as their home zone, they would pay a lower call rate when they are at home than when they are outside their home zone. You could apply a similar principle to underserved areas. People in underserved areas could make cheaper phone calls. The cost of transmission is a major cost bottleneck in South Africa and needs to be addressed, possibly through the introduction of more competitors in provision of transmission facilities. And facility sharing, as required by the Electronic Communications Act, needs to be speeded up by the incumbent mobile operators to allow smaller operators to make use of their facilities. These are some of the ideas that we think would help to reduce the cost of telecommunications in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Everyone.
The advantage to be the last is that they were tired. But look, few issues. Some of the morning the question was asked, I'm sure, to Vodacom. Which country where interconnection rates were reduced and there was this problem which you're talking about? They didn't give any example of that country. Except that they said other countries the penetration is low, but they didn't give an example which country will interconnection rate will reduce, and then there was these issues we are talking about. I think that NRC, I think South Africa will be unique from the rest of the countries where interconnection has been reduced. So that's what we are trying to advance to say we do that with a unique consequences. Because they could not respond in that. Maybe you'll be able to respond on that question. That's the first question. The second one is that you are talking about fixing the interconnection rate. I don't know who fixed the current one. I don't remember. Maybe ICASA fixed it somewhere, I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, the operators, I'm just trying to avoid the collusion part because it might cause other problems. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't remember anyone fixing the 125. But the 125 is there, so we have not fixed anything as a country. Even the regulator has not fixed anything. Maybe the internal fixing will be there, it just fixing. We should not be talking like that, but not fixing it, I know, by any other person. So, I don't understand the fixing part which you are talking about. Going forward, you must avoid it to have a fixed one. But currently, there is no fix which I know. Maybe you can ask this in terms of this fixing. You are alluded at and so on. The last issue that maybe we are moving from a position which says, I take your point that you can have different rates from different areas. But I think from the where we are now, we are saying it doesn't matter where you are, but it's costly. If I think that first umbrella issue, it is costly. It doesn't matter whether you are in a rural, urban, and so on. Then not matter whether you have 40 cents or 60 cents, whatever amount finally be the lower one. You can talk about what you are saying. The home zoning. None of the time application, but I'm going to talk about that home zoning now, might distort the focus. The focus that this cost is, this interconnection is costly. So let us deal with that, but I take into consideration what we are saying, that later maybe we can look in terms of how do we play around the zoning and so on. But for some reason I don't understand, because I'm not sure whether you are also a fan. You are a fan.
Yes.
What I don't understand is that how does the van teach the traditional operator? We are using their network, but we are more innovative to come up with certain products. They compete with their own customers. You know, we've given a presentation where one of the vendors been taking a customer for this big traditional operators like nobody's business. Going to the fence and so on. I cannot comprehend out of that person that you go to the network, someone come and go through your network, but teach you and give your customers and so on. Don't you think that is a lack of innovation in the traditional operators which you are having? That's why they are so relaxed, because they will net anywhere billions in terms of interconnection. So to be innovative is not an issue. It might by the way that they have got guarantees in terms of the interconnection rates and so on. Thank you.
To come back to your first question, where you referred to the example of a country where internet rates have been reduced, right? Various studies in countries where there's a high presence of competition. The watershed effect is not very prominent, right? For example, in the United States and some European countries, for example, the UK, besides your incumbent mobile operators, there are a large number of MVNOs, and a reduction in the interconnect rate doesn't necessarily result in a decrease in, an increase in the consumer prices. That's because there are a large number of competitors that would be waiting to take on customers if the incumbents were to let them go. In a country like Namibia, where there is one large established mobile operator, if the mobile operator doesn't reduce the consumer rate, it still has majority of the customers. It's still going to generate its revenue. It's the smaller it's the smaller operators that would that need to make a bigger effort to pull customers over. That at the moment Namibia hasn't seen the impact of the interconnection rate because it is not a country that can compare to South Africa. South Africa has 3 mobile operators, and a reduction in the interconnect rate would see competition. But it depends on whether that competition is sufficient, because in many areas, the South Sea, for example, doesn't have radio coverage. Both Vodacom and MTN have coverage. If they don't decide to reduce the consumer rate of calls, it doesn't impact them significantly. Second question.
Fixing rate. I'm saying I don't know any fixed rate currently for interconnection in the country. What is there is what is just by accidental of what thing is there, but was never fixed by anyone. So I was just trying to understand whether you are talking about where we are going, but not currently. Because currently I don't know anyone who has regulated that. That is a result of whatever process you have in this particular process.
Okay, I think the presentation doesn't say fixing, it says capping. But and that would allow operators to put their own interconnect rate. Whether they would reduce it in South Africa, I'm not sure about that. So it says capping it, but not fixing it.
No. I was saying we must not fix it. We must cap it.
Yes.
So I'm not saying what have we fixed so far?
It has not been fixed so far. There has not been competition in the market so far. There's still some stumbling blocks. The reason why we in this situation now is that because of competition, we went and when we started launch our service, we went to the operators to find out how to interconnect to them and how can we lease facilities because we can't have our own data centers like them. There were 2 operators that was very forthcoming in working with us to develop the services. Some had serious demands for guarantees and minimum traffic, which a new person, we don't even have subscribers, we can't commit to. So you would hang yourself if you commit to these things. And I believe they are very strict. The third one did not have the service until, I think, a month ago. So we in discussion with them to connect directly to them, and there would be no interconnect. So we could launch our services. Our services are we don't have subscribers. We provide value-added services to subscribers of other operators, and then we share in the revenue. They pay us the revenue of the guy who's making the call. So it's the first operator that we foresee that we may probably have problems with concerning interconnect and transmission and leasing facilities from them. That is the one thing. The other, to come back to your first question, there is reports that that dropping interconnect rates in Kenya caused for an increase in commercial rates, whether it's subsidies that's been withdrawn or the commercial rates for subscribers has increased. That is currently that one you know, and that is quite recent as well.
You sound like one of the research arms of the mobile industry. The more you talk, the more you're in favor of them. So I must tell you that the whole independence you tried to paint in the beginning falls rather bit flat in your input. I mean, if one of your main bases you base your things on is the fact that your members benefit from the fact that there are high connection rates and they're going to lose out now as entrepreneurs. I mean, I'm flabbergasted to hear that. As you suggested, we don't cut interconnection rates because your members benefit by having a high interconnection rate. It's a lot of flabbergasting. Now, I must tell you, your impact is full of speculation. If you want us to take you seriously, then you come to the committee and you put scientific facts on the table. This could happen, that could happen, that doesn't help me one bit. I'm not interested, I don't take that into consideration. The one thing you cannot convince me of is the one that Mr. Kouwani raised. And you try and tell me that if we are going to be able to cut the interconnection rate by half, that there won't be an impact, there won't be benefit. How on earth do you think we should ever believe that? And that there's no example anywhere where that happened. I'll tell you what the impact is, sir. If you're now paying 1.25 for interconnection rate, you are paying 60 cents. Now, I'm not very good, I've got an F in the trick myself for maths. But if I get that 1.25 and 60, every call is going to make 65 cents benefit. Now, obviously, I'm assuming we're going to ensure that that does go down to the consumers, as all these people have told us here, that they'll make sure the consumers get it. But I don't know why you try and convince us of something like that. It's so logical and just so ridiculous that if you're going to charge X amount and you're going to cut it by half, what kind of sustainable benefits? Don't they just benefit the consumers? I would suggest, that contrary to what the operators in your state, that they use benefit to your account, because more people will actually come to you because of another small bill every month. That's what's going to happen. Now, I don't know why you think we're so stupid that we can't see that there's going to be an impact, and you're trying to convince us there won't be an impact. So the minute you're on that issue, you can just stop the speculation. There is clearly going to be an impact. And we don't have to ask in the media to show us what that impact is. We know what it is. I mean, that's quite logical. But really, you know, I must say, I get very fed up in Parliament when people come here and give input that are full of speculation to actually preserve their self-interest. I get angry about it. Because how is an issue that we're dealing with when it's got the best good for the large amount of consumers in this country? That's what we're talking about. And I have to hear that, no, if you're going to have not, you must keep the rate high because then our members will be able to benefit from it because that's where they've made their promise. I really, you know, sometimes I just wonder why such inputs can't be given here. Because there clearly is no logic to it, there's no wisdom to it, and all it does is an insult, really. Please, man, put facts before us. If you want to make suggestions about speculations, put the facts before us. Just like they refused to put the facts before us today. To come and tell us what the costs are, they refuse to do so. Speculation doesn't make it any better.
Thank you, Chair. I'm adequately covered. I just wanted to say, you know, make the comment that it seems that there's an interest at stake in this presentation, sorry to say it, but you know, we have not been convinced. Very odd recommendations that have been made. Also, the issue of the symmetrical rates between established operators. The reverse was presented to us. If we want to free the market, we must do exactly the opposite. So to really fix this market to where it is and to keep out all the others is actually the model that we note in this presentation. Whereas we have been informed that we should liberalize and we should create competition in the market. Not us, but the regulator, but obviously we should pressurize the regulator to do that, to take the necessary steps. So I do believe that, you know, it feels very strange that we are confronted with the proposal of a capped rate. And to then, as Member DeLille said, what do we expect if they didn't lower the rate, interconnection rate, in a period of 8 years now, why would they do it if we just cap it and not force down a lower rate? Thank you, Chair.
The cap rate, currently the interconnect rate is a set rate of 1.25 by the mobile operators, meaning that neither one would reduce below 1.25. Our recommendation on the cap rate means that it is not a set rate of 1.25 between the mobile operators, but rather a cap rate at 1.25 where either one of the parties has the flexibility to have a lower interconnect rate below 1.25, and that is carried forward as the interconnect rate is forced down. So when the interconnect rate, for example, is reduced to 60 cents, it is still a cap rate at 60 cents, meaning either party has the flexibility of also having a lower interconnect rate below 60 cents.
I just understand the logic of this. If I must pay you 125, why would I allow you to save me 1 rand? Because I said that if it is kept at 125,
right,
and I choose to pay you a lower rate.
It also comes down to the cost of communication. For example, if you currently look at the cost of phone calls, a cost of a phone call from Vodacom to MTN is more expensive than a cost of a phone call to Telkom. And that's because the Telkom interconnect rate is lower. So if you were to have an MTN mobile and a Telkom landline, I might call you on your Telkom landline as a first choice rather than calling you on your MTN mobile.
Yeah. Mr. Kulwani?
There's something wrong with this thinking. Definitely there's something wrong. You think now thing is that there was a frequency for MTN and Vodacom in the east of Telkom. There was a time that saying that they must have the lower rate. There was no such frequency. When it comes to something, there was no such provision. But now I'm told to answer here. When I told that the reason that when MTN and Vodacom came to the market, part of the provision there was that in terms of their interconnection, it will be low. That has happened. But when Chelsea comes in, there was more than 500% increment. Increase in terms of the interconnection. Now we want to tell you today that's why I was saying, no one has fixed downside. Just put on some of us on first. That doesn't want to down, but unlike the regulation or a law which says must be 125. But all such. But till today, there was no even any consideration of reducing that. Now you tell me today that you just can't cap in terms of that doesn't make any difference. For all these years, I don't find any logic. I can't understand any logic. There is no reason for that happening in the industry. Just checking. In terms of everything, I am not convinced. Maybe we need to have some further discussion around that matter to understand. But today, maybe the issue of time is an issue. But I don't find the middle of it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And then you produce the same sheet as a person. Come and tell me tomorrow if you can use it.
Yeah. But then you can answer something. As the honourable member said, they are personal interests. This is what we have done. This is where we started our business. And the reasons why we did it, as I explained about the facilities leasing and about the other operators unwilling or not wanting to come connect with the RSC. Our business is based on value-added services. It has fixed numbers and value service numbers. So our business should not be affected by the interconnect rate. But it is because of what happened in the past. The past thing is it is changed now, and as I said, there's only one operator that we need to connect with, that we need to speak to, and we will engage the operator to try and get this guarantee removed, and then we can connect, because other operators we are already connected to. And then interconnect would not affect my business, but it would affect me if I use my cell phone. As I would agree, it would be a good thing to reduce the interconnect rate. But for us, this is what we are here to say. This is a bad time for us as a business. This is a bad time for a lot of businesses. We need a little bit of time. 3 months, we should be full.
That is for their interest, no one else.
I want to thank all the presenters who came in today. I think we've had a very long session, but a very interesting session. Sometimes it's got a bit hot in the room, but it's good. We've got a very good cooling system. The aircon is working, hasn't failed us today. So I want to wish you a very good evening and good night. And we'll meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock tomorrow? 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in this room for the remaining part of the presentations. Thank you very much, Dan.